Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Honda Meat. I am sitting in the shade talking to Mr. B-Rad Finch from Tire Rack.
Hi, Abe. How's it going?
It's not too bad. This is my first event back out. Feels weird. I had to, like, step away from somebody who tried to hug me earlier in a not mean way. They were just, like, not thinking about it, and I was like, So I'm trying to be especially careful with the COVID.
Understandable. I was surprised to see you here, of course. And as I started to get near you, I put up my mask right away. I need to stop.
And we're doing a podcast, but we're not really facing each other, so it's pretty okay. I told Brad to keep the microphone out of his mouth, which is usually a good idea.
I'm not eating it.
Though, not that microphone, but James Houghton can fit an entire microphone bulb into his mouth. I've seen it.
Fun fact for the day.
So you've had a day.
Indeed, I've had a day.
Tell me what happened today.
Without guess getting too far in depth in it, a certain car was driven on track, just doing some laps, some shakedowns, not really doing a time attack approach or anything. And long story short, made a nice window in the block and became very, very warm.
Yeah, very warm.
Yes, very warm. The rest of the car, not just the block.
Connecting rod decided it wanted to live outside the car.
That's right. It got stir crazy, you know, COVID and everything, so it just wanted to get out.
Yeah. And so you had to deal with that.
Yes.
You're fine.
Yep, fine. I'm fine. You know, it's one of those scenarios that you're happy everyone's fine, but it still stinks. And then we'll go from, see how much further the damage is and go from there.
Cool. I wanted to talk to you specifically because I want to talk about Apex Pros. All right. And among people I know, you are probably the most adept power user that exists. That's got to be true.
I like to use it for sure, and I definitely like to try to check out their all their podcasts and or webinars when they're having them. Yeah, there's still a lot I need to sit down and focus on and learn with it, but I very much find it to be a valuable tool.
So I don't want this to be an advertisement for Apex Pro, even though they are partners with the show and we really, really like their product. I want to talk a little bit about the usability and like how you interact with it that differs from ways you might interact with another piece or another data tool. For me, and Adam and I have said this before, the thing I like most about it is how easy it is to connect from the track to the data, right? It's using Apple's AirDrop feature, sending the data from your phone to an iPad, you know, makes it so that you can start analyzing your data almost as soon as you park the car. And there aren't other solutions on the market that you can do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, in the past, the only time I ever really tried to do data out here on the track is I tried Harry's Lap Timer Pro, which I've quickly, to me at least, it seemed more of a just, I'm documenting my lap. Here's a general idea of my time, general idea of speed. The Apex has a lot more internal data that's more usable and definitely helpful when it comes to trying to find how to improve your lap, or as Andrew likes to say it, the low-hanging fruit,
sure,
which I definitely found some at the beginning, which I was surprised I left on the table, to be
sure.
honest.
And I think a lot of it, especially mid and late corner, I think a lot of drivers have the ability to get most of the limit. But corner entry especially, I think, is where a lot of low-hanging fruit is, especially on some of these corners where you may find that you could enter 10 miles an hour faster and still have a car underneath you. So yeah. Getting indication that those things are happening is, I think, confidence inspiring.
Yeah, agreed. The two big things I would say that I discovered right off the bat here at Gingerman using Apex for the first time was between corners 5 and 6, I noticed that I needed to go into 5 faster, braking later, a more aggressive approach.
Now, that corner, it's debatable whether or there are multiple ways to take that corner. Do you find that you do V-shape or sweep, like, continuous radius?
I'm definitely a V now. I tried to do continuous radius after, well, data showing me of Apex doing V and then continuous radius. I was able to usually carry another 10 mile an hour in to five halfway through it doing the V, where I was just more comfortable at speed at that angle and still being able to straight line brake on ABS before having to turn in for
yep.
six then.
Yep.
Where prior I was always just trying to make it a smoother approach where I'd brake a little earlier and then turn in, or light brake while turning in, versus on my Civic now I pretty much just attack turn five and then brake after I hit the apex.
I think I see something similar with turn one. Andy Smedgard has some videos of his Evo back when it was a little bit less crazy. And something I think that's wild about turn one especially is at that time he would almost jump the curbs in one. I mean, he would be going outrageously fast into one and then kind of gather the car between one and two. But so many drivers brake heavy before one. And it's like, well, you don't have to. There's another way.
One is definitely another low-hanging fruit corner for people who are intimidated from the little crest, the little blind kind of entry. It's not much, but it's enough where, especially with the beginner class talking to people, they get intimidated by it. They break way early because they're like, oh, I don't know when to turn in. And it's like, okay, just find your marker. Get used to braking at that marker. Get used to releasing and looking ahead and when to turn in. One is definitely a corner when I watch people's videos. I like to focus on their minimum speed through one.
Yep.
Because I find myself to be one of the higher speeds.
I don't know what the number is in his car. I don't remember exactly. But it was something outrageous. It was like 100 miles an hour through one. Or like 90 or some. Like, it was a really, really high number. And then the braking and stuff happened after he literally jumps the curb in one.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think it's kind of similar to turn one at NCM, where the fast line is up over the curbs in one.
Yes. NCM, of course, a little different animal, but definitely you pretty much get on the inside of the curbing on one is how you're going to enter the fastest.
Yep.
And then you, depending on the car, but most people say you just nick corner two or 1B.
B1B. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you track all the way out under power, because if you're hitting 1B on most cars, you should already be on power.
Yep.
And I know I had to counter steer my Civic through there because I went through a little aggressively.
Well, I lost control in the Evo during one lap. I had just made a pass on a Viper. And you know, like, making passes in one lap is a weird thing. It doesn't happen. I made a pass on a Viper on that straight. And so I was trying to carry speed through one, and the car was a little bit tail happy at the time, and so I went into one too fast and lost it, and like was tracking toward the wall, and I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no, and just managed to like get the car out of the skid right before I hit the wall, and then I had to come back on track. But that was a gnarly moment, and it was a learning lesson for me, because what I was trying to do was make sure that I had enough room so that I wasn't gonna like blow that guy's lap apart in one. So I was trying to execute that pass, and then I was like focused on my mirror and not focused on what I should be doing.
Yeah, one can be hectic. It's usually not. I have seen certain pretty quick rear-wheel drive cars come aggressively into one and spin towards the sand pit and get two wheels because of it.
Yep.
Also mentioning passing, which is very rare in one lap. I also pass at NCM the only time. At one lap without the supercharger working on the 1LE. Yeah. So getting back to one lap and bringing this to Apex, Apex Pro, the first time I ever used it was during one lap in the one lap 1LE. It was really nice. I got to borrow Chris Vanderwalk's, and we used it all week. When you're on a new track that you've never been, the lights come in handy.
I believe it. And the model kind of builds itself over the first lap or so. And so I imagine if you only have your three hot laps in the morning session, you like that may be your first resource for laps two and three of that session, where it's like, okay, well, there's more. It's telling me there is. And there are certain tracks where sometimes you just don't have the courage to find it, but to know it's there is useful. Because I like certain tracks just give me the willies.
Yeah.
Road Atlanta in a fast car gives me the willies. And Palmer in the rain gives me the willies.
I think most tracks in the rain give me the willies, but yeah.
It was weird because, like, I had a car pass me at Palmer because my primary concern on that track was to just not crash. And I had a car pass me, and as soon as I had a car to follow, I think my lap time improved by like 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's actually really valuable. I mean, with everything going on in COVID, we're not, you know, right seat instructing. So we're doing the lead follow and then classroom sessions with our beginners. And I can tell you, once Ben or one of the other instructors comes out after the later sessions, once they get familiarized with the track and then does a lead follow at a better pace, not the parade lap style yep. that we do, I think a lot of students also gain from that. So like you were saying, if I can find someone to kind of follow at a track as I'm unfamiliar with, I try to do it all the time. I think it's very valuable. When we're talking about some low-hanging fruit with the Apex and that, I can tell you NCM was one of those tracks I was a little intimidated to tack some of the corners at speed for the first time. With the Camaro the first time, I actually went faster through, I believe, is it 4 is the high speed, right?
On
NCM.
NCM, it's 5. 4.
5?
It's 5.
Okay, 5. So, believe it or not, my lack of knowing the track, I guess, and aggression of adrenaline that I had going through me, I went fastest on my blind lap through 5.
Right. Sometimes you
over
just don't know
over
100
mile
that.
An hour, which is pretty rare for, well,
I think, like, part of my... I've been not driving competitively for a little while, but part of that reason is actually, like, I know enough now about my ability to know what I shouldn't do. And when I was just getting started, I was way aggressive and like scary aggressive. That was irresponsible. But I kind of like dial it back a little bit more. And I like slow cars now because my concern is how fast can I go instead of how much do I need to slow down?
Yes. Agreed. The funny thing with that for me was that was the first time, or one of the few times, I would say I experienced downforce being used, because the car was so composed, though, at those speeds through there. Even on the Pilot Sport 4S, which is not, you know, 200 tread wear or
sure.
below, I came back with my Civic Si for the time trial nationals event on a Rival S, and I'm thinking stock Civic, no rear bar, better tire. Oh, we're going to attack 5. We're really going to go for it. Yeah, I had a little counter steer for the first time through 5. I learned a valuable lesson
like
about downforce.
How much paved runoff there is right there. It's
yes,
a lot.
There's
but
a
you're
lot.
Still carrying a ton of speed. Like, if you lost the car, it would probably be not good.
I have seen a certain front-wheel drive probe, Cold Lotion, I think's the name for it, lose control there in the early stage. The car is still being run, and it has been through some incidents of its time.
It's, I don't know, as a tool, and we've got Scott Robertson sitting here as well, who's an Apex Pro user and has been, I think, for a while. I was just pulling a few people in grid today who had solos. And I, like, everybody knows what a solo is. Everybody knows what it does. I asked, you know, do you bring your laptop? Are you reviewing data at the track? And the answer is almost universally no.
Agreed.
And that is exactly why this tool, or a reason why this tool is valuable.
Yeah, that is actually one of the main reasons I selected the Apex Pro. Of course, I knew what AIM was. I knew what Race Logic was, what V-Box. I mean, it was a Smarty Cam. There's so many.
TrackMate was a huge thing for a while, and Race Capture is another one. Like, there's a lot.
There's a lot out there. After being able to familiarize myself through another user, Chris Vanderwalk, in one lap, seeing how it helped me on a track I've never driven, seeing how I could go back, look at my data from a session and give it to him for his session, potentially when we shared the track,
sure.
That was extremely valuable. And being able to crew you when he's on track, knowing what lap times he's setting, what his speeds are in a certain section as he's doing it.
That's a really cool feature.
Even before he was back, I had this information.
Yep.
Here's another non-one lap. When Colby Shields set his lap record at Autobahn Country Club the other week, I had a minor celebration as I saw the crew view number come up. And I was like, yes! People were looking at me like, what's your problem? I'm like, oh, Colby just set the lap record. Oh, and he just reset it again.
Yeah,
because crew view was watching this.
That's I think it's really cool. Something that I think is really unique is just how easy everything is.
If you can... if you understand basic data, if you already have the basic data information, it's super, super easy to use. If you don't understand the basic data, the app is super easy to use. And then Andrew's webinars and all the YouTube videos, it's all the knowledge is out there. You just spend the time.
And I think that's the thing. There is a subset of drivers that will be tech savvy enough and bring a laptop and sure, be able to run any piece of software they want for analysis. But not everyone is like that.
I am definitely not that guy.
And there are other applications that you can use that require the use of a laptop that have a ton of features. And they could be really useful. But I think it can be overwhelming to some people.
Yeah.
And if you can get 85 to 90% of the information and it's accessible right now and it's easy, that does a lot. Because what's not helping is you only looking data at home.
Yes. Being able to come back from a session and then go, okay, let me see my fastest laps. Let me compare here. Let's look at the friction circle real quick. Let me see my traces, my braking, my accelerating. Okay, I comparing this lap to this lap, you just click two individually, play through, look at your dots, where you are at the track, what's your min, what's your max. It's so easy to find low-hanging fruit.
And I think a lot of people, when they think about Apex Pro, they think about the unit, and they think about the lights.
Yes.
And they kind of see that as the only element. And it's
definitely
that's a part of it.
Yes.
But it arguably, it's not the most valuable part. How that unit sends data to your iPad and the software for analysis is the really the big value proposition. Because if I can go through the data review and say, well, I saw it giving me indication on the display in real time that I was leaving a little here, but then I can go back and I have the lights on the screen and they're correlated. And so yes, it's like, okay, well, I was going through four and I was too slow or I was not at the limit of grip. That's where it becomes really useful because you see that direct feedback in a time where the stakes are lowered a little bit because you're going through analysis instead of trying to change your activity on the track right then.
Yeah, definitely. And then with their new lap timers plus that you can subscribe to, predictive lap timing, I've been using that more and more off the Delta or just in general. That has been another fun tool, which before I considered buying a name in addition to an Apex Pro.
Sure.
And when they announced this new application or update for the subscribers, I was so relieved because I was looking forward to testing that out. And it's one of the best things to find QuickTime also. And everyone likes to brag, oh, but the predictive said I was doing this fast, even though, let's be honest, you're not going to hit that time 9 out of 10 times.
Probably so. Not. Pause for a second. Sorry for the break. Cal Fortner is going to try out an Apex Pro when he goes out on track. We had to like get him set up. Took about a minute. And you have your iPad handy. How far away are you parked?
I am actually, my iPad's at the end of the paddock.
When he comes back, I told him we could airdrop data to the iPad and show him like how that process works and then the data analysis. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely. That is another big feature because last week at Autobahn, I was working with some people who weren't my students who also had Apex data to work with. So I would just tell them to bring them the phone. I had my iPad. I'd grab theirs, airdrop it real quick, bring it over in a much bigger looking photo.
And there are like, I think Apex, or not Apex, AIM Solos, the originals did a USB connection to get your data. And if I recall, at least when they were released, the Solo 2s had to like have an ad hoc network set up to get data, which I thought was not the best approach.
I mean, I don't have an opinion too much on those because I actually never used them. But I know just from my experience with Apex that everything else was more involved. Yep. It was more usually laptop intensive, and you had to go through a lot of extra, I think, training and experience and just trial and error to learn how to use a lot of the data. Where, you know, we're talking about the ease. The ease is everything. The app makes things easier for you. There's tons of programs out there, like Adobe, Photoshop, whatever, that you can do amazing things with. In the hands of the right person. I don't know how to do anything on Adobe Photoshop, and that's fine. I'll use, you know, Microsoft Paint.
Right.
That's the difference, though.
Yep. And in this case, I know that an app that you can use for post-analysis, if you wish, is, I think people use TrackAttack. It's kind of like a general purpose popular, yes. software. You could do that if you want to. The question is, do you need to? Or can you get the data you need from your phone or from an iPad?
Which is definitely, going back to the convenience, why I selected the Apex Pro over anything else. I mean, I did ask other people and started getting to that there was more more information or more data at the beginning with AIM. Apex is making updates as they go, so they are definitely closing the gap.
Sure.
So that's great. But once again, the convenience of, okay, put on dash to my mount, which is already there, on, attached,
run,
calibrate, Gingerman, drive.
Yep.
That's it. It usually takes less than 30 seconds total start to finish to drive.
Yep. And you've been one to autocross.
Yes.
Something that I like about Apex, and it's disagreeable for some, I like the Apex score. And some people might argue about what its true value is, but to me, it feels similar to PAX in autocross, where cars are set up differently. They're going to have different performance potentials. PAX is an equalizer to help you compare cars and drivers.
Yeah, it's a theoretical bench racing.
Yeah, it's fine. Apex score is a similar thing in that the system knows, or it learns, how much potential your car has. And it's giving you a rating relative to the car's potential. And Andrew has said, perhaps on the show before, slow cars, it's very easy to get really high Apex scores. Because
definitely.
The limit of grip is really, really low.
Yes.
And so if you can get an Apex score of 85 in a Porsche GT4, that's amazing, because you're getting the limit of that car with that setup.
Yes.
An 85 in a spec fit may be its limit, but it's not as hard to reach.
Now, following up on that, here's a little comparison. That so I have an 85 or 86 here and 85 at Autobahn, 86 at Gingerman, by the way. That was done with the Dodge Durango.
Ah, the Durango.
Now, yes. So
you've also been one to flog a very high horsepower Durango around the track.
Yes. We just did a test last time here. I haven't really set a full attack lap with it. But during the testing, there was definitely some quick cornering. The braking was not the best.
Well, car weighs like 10 million pounds.
Yeah, it's at least 5,200 without me in it. So, and I'm not light either. But when I did actually attempt a few nice hard cornering laps in that, I did notice that the Apex score was higher in that particular vehicle. When I went back to check and compare data of mile an hour, it was higher than expected to.
Sure.
Because I was not looking through the mile an hours at 8, 9, 10 in a Durango. But when I was only 5 mile an hour slower minimum than my Civic Si, that weighs a whopping 2,000
pounds half
less.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was impressive to see. And then going to Autobahn the following few weeks after, in my Civic, and Autobahn's not a track I'm as experienced as
sure.
Gingerman. Nowhere near. I would have 10 times the laps here at Gingerman. But I got within 1% of there. The difference was, it felt like the Durango was easier to hit that. Well, my experience is one at the track.
Sure.
But the Durango with the less grippy tires was more, it was easier to hit the Apex score that I was going
for. Oh, absolutely. Like, if you put junk tires on, your Apex score is going to be really high because it's easy to max out the car.
Yes.
But in the same way that it would be complicated to do on a Porsche,
yes,
where getting the limit of the car and getting there and staying there is just harder in a car with higher potential.
Yes. So the one thing I found very, very interesting, though, was the Durango accelerates at an absurd rate.
Yeah.
The Civic does not.
Absolutely.
The Civic's fine, but the Durango can do 0 to 60 in 3 seconds flat, 2.9 on a good day.
That's so crazy.
So it accelerates at such a crazy rate. Now, when you think about the Apex score, it's maximizing your potential grip, and of course, straightaways,
you hurt the Apex score there.
So in a vehicle that accelerates at a much faster rate, you would just, okay, well, that's how the Durango got the win, right? Well,
I think it's more complicated than
that.
It's
more complicated than that.
And some born contrarians have argued that Apex score is not directly correlated with lap time.
No, it's not.
I think it's an instructional tool to tell you, hey, there's more here.
Yes, definitely.
But some have argued, one person in particular, that going around Gingerman, let's say, and slaloming the straights would potentially produce a higher Apex score. And I don't know that that's true, because I think it has to factor in more than just max G and at any time.
Yes.
Because you would argue probably that if you were trying to slalom the straights, you'd also be going a lot slower.
Yes, you would be going a lot slower. And the theory of, yes, you're constantly having a G load on it by slaloming an entire straightaway, you know, I would be interested to actually just do a session and try it out to see if that's the fast, that's the high Apex score lap.
And what we're not talking about trying to game the system here. Like, I don't, if you scored an Apex score 100%, but your lap time was 3 minutes, I would not care.
Yeah, bingo.
Seeing a fast lap with a high Apex score says that driver is getting as much out of that car as the system thinks is available.
Now, I have seen where there's definitely fast laps I've done where that's not my highest Apex score.
Sure.
They've had lower Apex percentages on slower laps. Now, my theory on those laps, especially with a rear-wheel drive vehicle, there's some slip angle involved.
Sure, yeah, I believe that.
And that can probably do some wonky things to your Apex percentage.
Well, or maybe you're changing the total radius of a corner, and perhaps you're opening the car up sooner to get more exit speed than you might otherwise get. And so comparing lap to lap, I mean, small differences are just that. They're small differences. But if you were comparing an Apex score of 85 to a 72, I think there would probably be a direct correlation to lap time.
Yeah. Definitely when you're talking about a big percentage difference there, I would say you're going to be able to notice. And when you dig into it deeper other than just looking at a percentage and actually saying, like, friction circles of the two laps, and you can actually see your minimum or maximums in certain corners, you're going to see the difference of why the percentages are higher and other laps are not. And you can tell, like, just like I said, slip angles being a part of the Apex score. It is part of it. Conditions, elevation changes, going up, obviously, versus going straight or down.
Yep.
You know, you're accelerating at a different rate. That affects your Apex score a little.
Yep, absolutely. So we spent a lot of time talking about Apex Pro, and we're in the middle of COVID, and competitions are happening. I know last year you did King of the Mountain in Brad's car. Brad Yonkers, not Brad from Tire Rack, because that's you.
We were Brad squared.
Are you going back?
So, yes, I had been invited back. And up until this last week, actually, I was going back.
Okay.
I have actually just put in my cancellation, unfortunately.
Okay.
I will be doing Champ Car at Gingerman instead this year.
Okay.
I skipped out on it last year. I did have a great time, King of the Mountain. You and I is a great bunch of guys, and they put on a great big event.
Yeah, they did. For that being the first event
this year,
it had
be even
a
bigger.
Lot of visibility. It was a serious event with serious competitors.
Yeah,
and the competition was good.
This year, it's going to be, like I said, bigger, badder. They've done more paving. There's more area to actually race on. They've invited some more names from the Time Attack and autocross community.
Yeah. So in their first year, I thought they had a ton of overlap from the guys that you would see at Optima's Ultimate Streetcar. Serious, serious autocrossers, but probably not SCCA Nationals autocrossers. And so I looked at the entry list, I was like, there are some autocross names on here that I would expect to see that I didn't. And I think in part is because UMI is still a lot of times SCCA Nationals, people build the cars to the class instead of just building, like, outright monster
Agreed.
Cars.
Yes.
Whereas UMI was like, build the fastest autocross car you can.
Yes, UMI was run what you brung, show up, these are the rules, good luck. And Brad Yonkers built the built his car to the rules or lack of rules.
Yeah, well, and like, I was kind of amazed at how competitive you guys were with a setup that I still think is quite simple.
Yes. His car is great. It just works. The whole point was why I was so confident in his car is it already worked very well. I had driven it multiple times. I knew what to expect. And then once we put on the ACRs and dropped a few hundred pounds off of it, it was a whole nother animal.
I mean, it for a while was a benchmark in the Street Mod Group in Grid Life Time Attack.
Yes.
And with, if I compared it to their level of preparation relative to what I had to do to make my Evo fast, like for them it was just easy, right? Like stock motor. He had bought the car that was already supercharged. I think it was like a kit from Dynan or something. Like it was just there.
Yeah, I can't remember who the kid is through, but
ESS maybe.
Yeah, I think that's it. So yeah, he already had it. It's already intercooled and everything. It had a pretty simplistic setup when it comes to a time attack car,
and it was
and
fast.
It just worked. He would take it to work when on days just because. Of course, now the ice cream test, it had no problem with that.
Yep.
At one point, it was getting ready to do one lap with the way it is.
Yeah, and I'm sure it would have been competitive. It was a solid, solid car.
Yeah.
And I love cars like that.
Yeah, his car was very simple. It worked, and that made sense.
But to me, what was so weird is a car that was a time attack benchmark with, not on purpose, happened to also be a car that was potentially a winner at UMI's King of the Mountain. Just coincidence.
And we did get kind of, I mean, we had experience with autocrossing the car before. I had done a drive autocross event at Grissom Air Base and had one with it before. And I've done events here running actually Gingerman backwards as an autocross before.
Gingerman backwards.
Yes.
I've driven Gingerman backwards one day, and it was so fun.
Yeah, as an autocross, it's pretty unique when you're doing over 100 still.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like I like doing high-speed autocross at Blackhawk. It's super fun.
And Grattan, too.
I've never been.
Unfortunately for Grattan, the one time I did it was my last time because it's usually the same week as Solo Nationals.
Okay. You're not going to UMI. Are you going to Nebraska?
Yes. I am registered for Solo Nationals already in my Civic for my G Street 2019
I cannot
sedan.
Believe your car and my car are in the same class. It's stupid.
Unfair.
And it is so unfair.
And they did it just to penalize the rarity of your car.
And it's annoying. Just because it's rare doesn't mean that it's good.
Agreed. For example, the 2000 Cobra R, I could buy parts on that to put on my GT to run it in ESP, but then you couldn't run the car in the most classes if you bought it outright. Yeah. It's just a weird thing.
I will likely not spend the money on a new car for a while. That said, the amount of tire that you can put on a 10th gen and still fit in G Street is crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to run a 255 setup on the stock 8-inch wide wheel for G Street. I chose the RE71R just because I know how it wears in camber-challenged cars like mine is for the class.
Sure.
But I have used a 17x9 off my Mustang and a 275 and put them up front and have done lock-to-lock without touching. So
nice.
That is a shocker to
me. And it's... It doesn't, I mean, I think it makes similar power to my SI, but it has so much torque that coming out of a dig corner in an autocross, it feels so fast.
Yeah, that's really the big difference is just the way the torque is used in that very small turbo, but it's used very quickly. I've used our other 8th gens. I've compared here. I've probably driven four different 8th gen SIs, all of them modified in a different form, one maybe stock. None of them were within 2 seconds of my SI stock.
Here at Gingerman. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, it's like I was talking to, I can't remember who I was talking to this morning about 8th gens coming through, and I've only driven the 8th gen on track once here. Coming through two, I felt like that in a stock SI was probably a second gear corner only because as soon as you're trying to exit two, like, you've got a long run. And the car, if you're in third gear, it's got nothing up until high RPMs. And so you have to flog it in two in second in order to be able to get a good exit.
Yep. I know the feeling of that. I know, like, oh, which gear are you going to pick for this corner in this car? Because I don't want to fall out of VTEC. I know playing those games with my car, it's the opposite. Mine's like, oh, shift before red line so you can get back into the torque band sooner. Don't rev it out.
Yep.
Like, it's, I don't shift on purpose on certain sections.
Well, and with the Evo, it was like, it was on another planet, right? Like, I don't care what gear you're in. As long as you're not fifth, you're fine. And because of that, I think the challenge of driving was just a little bit different, where it's like, you don't have to be that good to be pretty fast than Evo.
Well, I mean,
you can be good,
yeah,
but you don't have to be.
There's different levels, and of course, the all-wheel drive system does help, but...
Sure, yeah, and especially, like, I think we're about done. Yeah. You've got to go back and instruct.
It looks like I need to go check on my ducklings, so I need to end this shortly.
Well, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it.
It's always
it.
Fun talking to you. I'm
very happy to see you, Abe.
Buy a Apex Pro from the Tractune website. I think they might be in stock. I hope they are by this time. Andrew's waiting on parts and supply chain coming from wherever. Is I think the parts are really, really inexpensive, but they're an essential component. And so it's, I think he bought like 10,000 of them now so that he doesn't have to worry about this anymore. But we really appreciate you listening. Rate and review us on iTunes. Support us on Patreon if you want to. And look for more shows coming up.
Yep. And if you happen to buy tires, Brad at Tire Rack, extension 4398.
We love Brad, so please support Brad.
Had to throw it in there.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at a grid life to say hello.